This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 327 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from shuddersincpodcast.com, and joining me in my home studio, this has to be a first, David Kembry, welcome.
Good afternoon, good evening.
And if things sound a little different, it's because I'm recording with a different microphone and everything's wrong. I'm facing the wrong way. I'm normally facing my computer and now I'm facing David and the computer's behind me. I can't see what my recording levels are like. I don't have headphones on, so I've got no idea what it sounds like. So it's going to be an interesting hour.
We'll see how we go.
Yeah. So tell us a bit about yourself, for those who don't know you.
Pretty much I've been involved with photography since I was about 15, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
long enough.
Long enough. mainly I sort of picked up one of my parents' cameras and started using that, and then I think it was at an air show or something like that, not twigging that I'd run out of film. I'd rattled all the shots off, and after that, and sort of, oh, I only got 24 shots. And so after that, I decided, I'll go out and buy my own camera.
And ended up. So do you remember what type of camera it was?
That one I'd done is probably a rangefinder, I'd imagine.
Right.
And I went out and bought a Ricoh motorized 10M, whatever it was back
right.
in the day.
Yep. A film camera.
Pretty much had that right up until 12 years ago, I guess.
Yep.
And sort of it was starting to cause troubles. The mirror was starting to stick and just maintenance problems, and no one was going to be able to fix it. And went out and bought a little point-and-shoot and got hooked on digital from then.
Yeah, right.
Took the digital to the point-and-shoot to try and do some other stuff with it, and found the limitations after being from SLR to that.
Yep.
And then realising limitations, focus speed, all the rest of it, went out and bought my first digital DSLR
right.
after that. So.
Cool. And what was your first DSLR?
Pentax.
Right.
Because I had a Pentax MZ60 and sort of got a couple of lenses with that, and that did me for up until 3 years ago when I bought another Pentax after that.
Yeah, right.
Main reason was that I was looking for something that was weatherproof.
Right.
Reasonable price, and you could virtually go out and buy an old Pentax lens, show it on the front of it.
Right.
And
much like me with my Minolta lenses.
That's right.
Yeah.
As opposed to Nikon and Canon, which sort of seem to swap their stuff around and been expensive.
Oh, what are you saying over time Nikon and Canon have changed their mount?
I think the Canons, like the Canon film EOSs, don't go onto the digitals.
Oh, okay.
I think they've...
Right.
The mounts changed.
Right.
I'm not a Canon shooter.
Yeah, right.
The only Canon that I've used is the point and shoot. And I'm quite happy with them.
And of course, you obviously want the weather seal because you shoot a lot of dolphins and whale watching and that sort of
That's
stuff.
That's only been the last couple of years.
Oh, okay. So why the
More
weatherproof?
More with the being out in storms, because I'd like to do lightning photography.
Storm chasing.
Storm chasing, that sort of stuff. Also, I was living in Tasmania at the time, so heaps of waterfalls.
Right. I was going to say where it's always raining.
not necessarily always raining, but it's sort of you'd have the mountain and it'd be misty, like just that fine mist sort of stuff, where you try and cross a creek. Like I just didn't want to. It's a little bit more, mind you. The camera that I've got now got drenched in salt water last season in whale watching.
Oh, really?
And works fine. I just sort of brought it home. Didn't even really dry it out that much, just towed it off and no water got into it.
So the salt didn't bother it?
Hasn't bothered it.
Yeah, right. Well, that's good.
So
good to know.
Well, I'm quite happy with them.
Yeah.
And excited because it's the
K1.
The K1, but it's not going to do everything I want it to do.
Oh. Where does it fall short?
Just the frames per second. It's quite slow. It's only 5 frames per second.
Oh.
5 or 6. It's not like it's about equivalent
to what? You want a video camera.
I'm actually looking to use video this season a little bit more.
Right.
Because I think that's just grabbing people's attention more with it.
Yeah.
I still like the stills of it, but yeah, the K3 is about 8.3 seconds, frames per second.
Yeah, right.
So it's not as fast as the Canons and Nikons.
Yep.
But it will do for what I want to
do
with it.
Wow. Geez, that's a lot of frames to snap off.
Yeah, when you come away from a weekend or a day out and you're sort of looking at 1,000 photos sometimes. Jeez.
And then there's got to be a high churn rate. Like, there'd only be, you know, a dozen keepers out of all that, I would imagine. When you're shooting in that sort of burst mode, you're just going for that one killer shot of, you know, whale in midair kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I've got a sequence. I can get the whole sequence through it, which is nice to put on as a collage sort of setup. Other than that, it's just that one shot midair, perfect clear water droplets.
Yeah.
Which was a learning curve for me starting out, because when I first went out, 2014 was my first raw season.
Right.
I'd been out while watching a few times and had taken some photos. And oh, yeah, this is fun. And then last, 2014, I thought, oh, I'm going to try this and get out on the boat every week. Every time that chance I had, I was on the boat.
Wow.
And one of the guys, the crew on the boat, was a photojournalist stuff, and he'd done a lot of sports sort of photography, and he said, how you doing? I said, oh, I'm struggling. I said, the photos are out of focus. I said, the water coming off, I'm just blurring the animal.
Right.
I said, it's clear.
But so is that just not high enough shutter speed?
High ISO. So I'm shooting 800 to 1,000 ISO.
Right.
And then letting the camera do the rest, set the aperture and shutter speed.
Okay. So was it though still a case, though, that you weren't getting a fast enough shutter speed? Was that why the water was blurring?
I think it was just the... Yeah, I don't know what the shutter speeds are, because I can be at like 1/500th of a second.
Yeah.
But I think it's just more that there's a clarity.
Right.
With it.
Because of the ISO?
Yeah, because of the ISO. Because you drop the ISO back and it just seems to...
Sharpen up.
Sharpen. Or you bump it right up and it sharpens it right up. And
how old's the body you're shooting with?
It's a Pentax K5, so that's 3 years old, 4 years old.
Okay. Wouldn't have thought 800 or 1,000 ISO would have presented a massive challenge to a camera of that vintage.
But you've got to be at that height to get the quality of the photo. But sometimes I'll come through and just run a noise reduction. It's not terribly bad.
Yep.
Again, depends what the weather's doing.
of course.
But certainly tests my skills out with knowledge of, like, because you'll be on the boat and you'll be 1 minute away from the sun. Next time the whale will be up, if you're sitting into a silhouette, and it's near impossible sometimes to even see the whales.
Yeah, right.
So you just sort of shoot and hope, fingers crossed. And But it's always some...
So what sort of lenses are you shooting with?
I went out last season and bought a Sigma 70-300.
Right.
Which I wasn't happy with.
What sort of aperture range is that?
3.5 to 5.6, I think, off the top of my head.
Yep.
Wasn't terribly happy with it.
Okay.
So last season I went out and bought a Pentax 50-300. So just gave me a little bit extra, 20 mil on the wide angle.
On the wide end, yep.
Nice and easy, like better when...
And it's still a 3.5 to 5.6.
Yep, same aperture range. A little bit easy when they come right up to the boat.
Yeah, because you can get wider without having to change lens.
Yeah, well, I tend not to on the boat. I take a second body with me.
Yeah,
I take
fair the old body. Too much spray in the air to be wanting to change lenses.
No, couldn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
So that's what I do pretty much from June through till November.
Right.
The whale season in New South Wales.
Yep.
This year, fingers crossed, I'll get to do a little bit more travelling away from home base.
Right.
So, like, Nelson Bay is great because you've only got to go out through the heads and you're probably 3 or 4 miles offshore and you're seeing whales.
Right.
But I'm going to look at doing Port Macquarie, Coffs Harbour.
Right.
Byron.
It's a bit further north.
North and south, just get my name out there a bit more, because ultimately that's what I'd love to do. Travel the world doing whale photography, but it's a dream.
Hey, whatever floats your boat, you know? I mean, there's people out there doing all kinds of niche photography and,
Yeah, well, there's people out there doing it, and I think it's going to get the point where it's saturated.
Yep.
Like everything does get, because they think, oh, is this easy? I try and help people on the boat when they come on, if they've got cameras.
Yeah.
Try and get them into burst mode, say, try this, try that. So they don't walk away from it. And I'm there trying to sell my photos, but I don't mind helping other people out either.
Yeah. So. It's interesting what you're saying about, it being a learning curve. I think I don't think it matters what area of photography you're in. There's a whole range of elements to learn just to shooting that one genre. Like listening to David Marlin last week talking about shooting the cricket, you know, and just...
Hey, at least with the cricket, you can see what you're shooting.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. Although there are surprises in cricket that you know, can't always... I mean, obviously, he would try and be as prepared as possible for, but, you know, I mean,
when you got
things happen fast, you know, batsman gets a top edge and wicket takes a catch behind the wickets, you know, that kind of stuff would happen in hundredths of seconds.
You've still got that sort of anticipation, that where a whale you might have, if they're coming up to breach, unless they've done it multiple times.
Yeah.
They can just come straight up and you've got a 40-ton animal and you, oh, hang on, my camera's down by your side. Don't miss that one. It's all over and done with you.
Yeah.
A second. I was surprised the first few times I was going out because I was missing the breaches because it doesn't happen every cruise.
Right.
Some cruises, they'll just be swimming along. They'll come up, breathe, go back down again.
So what I'm hoping you can answer this. What is it that causes them to want to breach?
No one knows.
Oh, really?
No one knows. Oh, the calves are starting to think it's muscle development in the tail because their tail is
their main form of propulsion.
Their main form of propulsion. That's where the muscles are and all the rest. Are. For the calves, it's exercise.
Right.
For the adults, they just don't know whether it's cleaning barnacles off. They're just doing it for the fun of it. It's a defensive, like just to make a noise through the water to chase something off. It's hard to study because you can't get into their mind to say, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
There's no rhyme or reason. You could be one of the cruisers we were at last season, so 2015. We'd gone across to a mother and calf because that was the only whales we'd seen.
Yeah.
And the skipper sort of said, I'm just going to head up here because you can pretty much, on the northern migration, they're in a line. Southern migration, they're in another line. They're usually pretty much in within 500 metres of a corridor.
Okay.
To a kilometre. Sometimes you'll get them further out.
Yep.
And we decide, we'll just head over here. And then all of a sudden, just one come out. And then within 10 minutes, there's about five or six breaching.
Wow.
And it's just, where do you go from there?
Yeah, right. And you get no forewarning, of course.
You've got no forewarning at all. And then your fingers crossed that, I hope they're going to keep doing it. And sometimes they do. Sometimes they'll just come up one breach.
Yep.
Sometimes it's more of a warning with the boats coming across at high speed. And they might be, on the southern migration, you've usually got a mother, calf, and an escort. So the escort will be a female adult.
That doesn't have a calf.
Doesn't have a calf.
Right.
So she's virtually the midwife.
Yep.
And sometimes they'll come up, because I'll hear some person coming across in a powerboat.
Yep.
And they'll come up just to get you to slow down. That's what they've...
Wow.
Sort of one of the other things as well. So they're interesting creatures to study. It's... Even for me, like I'm 2 years into it now, it's more for me to go out and if I miss a shot, I miss a shot.
Yep.
Now it's sort of, I'm led to a proxy crew member virtually just to talk to people about keep an eye out. This is what you're looking for and then jump in to do the photography.
Yeah,
and I share with the crews that I go out with as well. So I'm not,
As in you give them images.
Giving them
to
images
use.
For...
Yeah.
Credit, which everyone sort of
everyone wins.
Like last year, the 2014, that I wanted to make a good relationship with them.
Yep.
And I've done that, and they've been really good for me, and get me on if I'm up there, and they've got I've got two spots here. Come on.
Yeah, right.
Sort of like that. So I've got an unofficial, thing with them, and I'm just quite happy to share the photos.
Cool. All right.
But that's a bit about me.
Cool.
That's one. That's been my main focus for the last couple of years. I've sort of tried to develop other skills like portraiture and that sort of stuff because I'm primarily a landscape photographer.
Yep.
Got sort of not bored with doing that, but living in Newcastle, I'd photographed a lot of stuff there and I'm getting tired of doing that.
Yeah, I've fallen into that trap where you do, you feel like you've shot everything around the area you live in and you just wish you could travel somewhere else and shoot, things that you don't get to see every day.
Where the whales, I'm still waiting for that. We've got what we call a money shot where there's a Port Stephens Lighthouse out on Finkel Island.
Right.
With a whale breaching in front of it at sunset.
Jeez.
And we've got no control over the boat, the skipper, the times that they're going to do it. And I say to them, look, guys, can we hang out here for another 20 minutes or so?
Yeah.
I could probably charter the boat, but yeah.
But you could spend a lot of money.
And not get the shot?
Yeah.
You just
on multiple trips,
yep.
Just trying to get that one shot. Yeah. Wow.
No, it's fun. And dolphins, I don't bother because they're too quick for me.
Yeah.
If I get a snap on, it's a snapshot. It's not a plan sort of thing.
Yeah.
They're just too quick.
All right. So should we cover some of the stuff that we've come up with over the last week?
Start doing that.
All right. So I'll start off with the stuff that Adam posted to the Facebook wall through the week. And I'll go in the chronological order in which he posted them to the Facebook wall. The first one was all about the Flickr uploader, which is a piece of software that you can run on your desktop that allows you to automatically sync images from your desktop machine to your Flickr account. And just this week, Flickr have decided that that is no longer a free app and that it now has to be paid for. And you can either go subscription at $6 a month or a yearly fee of $50 a year. So
I can't
know anyone was still using Flickr.
I joined up and it sits there. It's like Instagram. I get a lot of random hits on Instagram, which I...
Right.
But for me, that's a hassle because you've got to virtually process your photos.
Yeah.
Put them up onto Facebook, I think I do, and then save it from Facebook back to Instagram.
What?
Yeah, because you can't, on a PC, you can't go from load straight.
Well, you can't upload straight from your desktop to Instagram. That can't be right, surely.
I don't know. I'm very technically inept sometimes. I'll have to have a look. Leave it with me.
Yeah, see, the whole thing about Instagram, I haven't started an Instagram account because I feel like, and I'm happy to be proven wrong if this is not the case, but I feel like the key to it is all in the first half of the word. Hmm. It's about instant. It's about the stuff you snap on your cell phone more so than, hey, I shot this and then I took it home and I imported it into Lightroom and I processed it and then I exported it as a JPEG and then I uploaded it to Instagram. And I kind of feel like that's not really the point of Instagram.
Yeah, the way the interface is set up is very much like that. Snap, share, gone.
Yeah, apply one of the built-in filters and then post it kind of thing. And so, and because I'm not into that type of thing, I just haven't bothered with Instagram. Hey,
my ego can do with a hit occasionally. It's not often that my Facebook page is a very small community of about 96 people that follow me.
Right, yeah.
Which, again, I'd like to build. But, yeah, it's just a bit of fun for me to get the name out there and the images out there.
Yeah.
And who knows what's going to happen with it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Flickr, I think I maybe got 3 or 4 photos. That's never been
I've got a, I don't know, probably a couple of hundred photos up on Flickr, but I haven't logged into my Flickr account in so long.
Yeah, I wouldn't know my password.
No, exactly. And because I'm so entrenched in the whole, you know, Google and Android universe now, I use Google Photos as a backup.
Yep.
I just send, you know, everything that I am happy to keep. I send a high res, like, because I don't know if you know, but with Google Photos, you can send images up to, I think it's 16 megapixels.
Okay.
And you can have unlimited quantity up to 16 megapixel resolution. If you want to send images of greater resolution than that, then I think you get, it's like 15 gigabytes or something like that. So what I do is everything that I'm happy to keep, I export it from Lightroom at, you know, 14.8 or 15.8 megapixels. Mm-hmm. So it's just inside the limit. And then upload all those to Google. And, of course, I've got unlimited storage. So
I might have to look at that.
That just, for me, that's just like a third, you know, a backup.
Yep.
So if everything went haywire here at home, you know, if I, you know, if the house burnt down and I lost both my desktop PC and the backup hard drive that's in the cupboard, I've at least got an off-site backup in the form of Google Photos. So.
Yeah, I was using Dropbox, but I don't know how effective that's been for the high-res stuff.
But the thing is, can you actually view the images within Dropbox, or do you have to kind of download them? Does it show you thumbnails, or can you view them full screen, or like a Flickr type thing, or?
Just bear with us. We'll have a Glenn moment here.
Yeah. So anyway, for those who are still using Flickr, I would imagine that's a very small minority of people these days. Yeah, be aware that the Flickr Uploader software is now paid service. And oh, okay, so there you go. David's just showing me on his tablet Dropbox.
It's Dropbox, and it's got thumbnails.
Very, very similar look to Google Photos.
Okay.
So, yeah, cool. All right, the next one that Adam had, I'm going to skip because, David, you picked up on this story. So we'll skip that and we'll go to the... This is an interesting story. This guy from Lima in Peru used a UAV to scan a massive statue of Jesus, right? Like it's like Christ the Redeemer in Rio de Janeiro, except this is in Lima. And I'm guessing, looking at that photo, that it must be a good 20 meters high. Easy. So it's a fairly decent sized statue. And he's taken a 3D model of that simply by flying his UAV around and around and around and around and mapping this in three dimensions, and then used that to create a 3D printed version, not to scale, obviously, but like a scaled down version.
Yeah.
But what did he call it? There was a particular name for the type of scan. I did see it when I was scanning through this story earlier on, and now I can't see it. But pretty trippy.
That's pretty trippy.
But look, there's the flight path of the UAV around the statue.
That would almost be like a 3D mapping type thing to do that, wouldn't
it? Yeah. Photogrammetry is the name of the technique. Photogrammetry uses a series of photo images to computationally map a 3D model or space. So there you go.
To think of what other applications you could, I guess, from a...
Mate, I don't know. I'm sure there's plenty of other things that people will find,
think of it with it.
You know, that sort of thing useful for. Anyway, the next thing that Adam had was a story on Petapixel about a new camera rental company called Parachute, spelled P-A-R-A-C-H-U-T, so no E on the end. And basically what these guys are hoping to be is like the Netflix of camera rentals, where it'll be a fixed fee of $149 a month, which is fairly exy, but I guess if you're a professional who's got plenty of work and you don't want to spend the money to own the hardware, this might be a...
Or if you want to try some new gear out before you go and purchase it yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So they haven't launched yet, and the story does mention that there are already some other players in this landscape. There's Lens Rentals, Borrow Lenses, and a couple of other peer-to-peer services called Camera Lens, L-E-N-D-S, and ShareGrid. But Parachute's hoping to go in a different direction with the subscription model, where the others are just a flat rental fee. So the idea that they're hoping, you know, when they launch, is that you'll pay your $149 a month and you'll then be able to borrow whatever gear you're interested in trying out, and you can hang on to it for as long as you want it.
Okay.
And then if you decide you really like it, you can buy it off them at a reduced rate. Or if you go, I've done what I needed to do with that, or no, it didn't meet my expectations, you can just hand it back.
And there's no penalty or any minimum term.
Because you're on a subscription model, so you're basically just always paid to use whatever they've got in stock.
Yeah, that's not a bad...
It's an interesting concept.
Especially, from my point of view, not being able to, one, walk into a camera store locally and pick up a Pentax and say, is this going to do what I want it to do?
Right.
That'd be perfect for me to...
Yeah.
Give it a run and see whether...
The only downside I see to it is the cost. And obviously, you would need to be, unless you were extremely affluent, you would need to have a regular source of income from your photography to warrant that kind of expenditure. I mean, $150 a month, that's over 12 months, what, 1,700 bucks.
Yep.
So
I spent $4,000 on whale watching last year.
Well, there you go. Hey,
and no income from it.
And I suppose when you consider that, you know, most of your decent, you know, certainly your top of the tier DSLRs or even the mirrorlesses, you know, your bodies are now up $3,000-$4,000 yep. for the body only. So maybe $1,700 a year is not such a bad expenditure if you can justify it. Yeah, because it means you can use the camera body for, you know, 18 months.
Yep.
You know, and then
upgrade to
the next one. You know, at essentially just that monthly fee. So. Very interesting concept indeed.
I'll have to keep an eye out for that one.
Yeah. And the last one that Adam had was the announcement that came out, I think it was today or might have been yesterday, that Instagram are about to introduce a curated feed. And I think this is going to irritate a lot of people. As Adam said when he posted it on Facebook, great, so Instagram's going to become as crappy as my Facebook feed.
Yeah, well.
And I tend to agree. I absolutely wish that all of these social-type services like Facebook and Twitter and Google Plus mm-hmm. and, you know, not that I'm on Instagram, but I wish all of them would give you the option of just, no, don't curate it. Give me everything that any person I'm connected with is posting.
Yep.
You know, it frustrates the crap out of me that there are people on Facebook that I never see their content because Facebook's algorithm has deemed that they're not worthy of my attention. Yep. You know, I find that really annoying.
Yeah. For Instagram, I'll just pop onto it occasionally because I'm like following Nat Geo. I follow.
Right.
A whole heap of other photographers that I've just found yep. off there, and just the inspiration. Oh, hang on. Well, you sort of go through that self doubt, even for me, which I've been going through a lot of that lately. And you look at this, like with the interest that I've got in the whales, 90% of the time.
Yep.
And I'm looking at it and thinking, my photos are just as good.
Yeah.
It just gives you that little bit of self belief that I'm on the right track.
Yeah. And I think it comes down to that whole 10,000 hours thing. The more you do something, the better you get at it.
Yeah, there's 12,000 shots last year.
Yeah.
Out of that, I've got a top 25. Yeah. And that was pretty harsh, but I don't know. I don't like the way Facebook one changes almost week to week on the way the news feed comes up.
Yeah.
And you wonder, why haven't I seen anything from them? Oh, just the algorithm, we haven't posted a lot, or my stuff would be the same because I don't post a lot on the whale side of it, just sort of occasionally. And so there's probably people out there thinking, oh, this post has dropped off. Yeah, I'm not a fan of it, but I guess if they've decided that's the way they're going to do, we're going to have to put up
with it. Well, that's the thing, you know. I remember when they changed... They did a massive UI overhaul of Facebook probably 4 or 5 years ago now. And I remember everyone was bitching, going, oh, I want the old Facebook look back, you know. And around that time, someone posted this great, these pictorial memes that you see on the Facebook yep. feed all the time. And it basically said, if you're not paying for it, you're not the customer. You're the product being sold.
That's probably a fair point.
And I thought, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. You know, if you're getting the service for free, then they have no need to satisfy your desires, you know, because they're making a mozzer out of selling your information to advertisers.
Yep.
You know, by giving targeted ads, you know, knowing the sorts of things that you follow on Facebook, they can send ads your way that are targeted to your interests. And they're making a killing out of that. So
yeah, well, I guess they don't need to do a subscriber-based sort of subscription model with Facebook.
It's interesting, you know, because every now and again you see these blog posts pop up that say, you know, if you could pay for Facebook and have it ad-free, would you?
Mm.
You know, and I kind of think... That would be an interesting scenario to explore to see how many people would bother. Because Kath asked me the other day, she said, if you had to pay for Facebook, would you? And I was like, no.
Well, I was going to do a Facebook free February.
And yeah, right.
I didn't get to it. Lasted 2 days. 2 days.
But the other thing is that on the login page, you go to the login page for Facebook, and down the bottom there it says it's free and it always will be.
Oh, okay.
And it's been like that for the 8 years that I've been on Facebook. So I don't know whether they will ever go to offering a paid ad-free version or not, but I seem to think that their business model is very much targeted towards selling advertising, and yep. So they'll probably keep it as a free service to
the
users.
I guess that comes back to where it started from as well with Facebook.
Yeah.
Was that university
yep.
type thing? And I know what university students out here in Australia are like. They've got no money to spend
right.
at all. So I'd imagine the United States is the same
thing,
sort of
though,
thing.
I kind of feel like the millennials are less interested in Facebook simply because their parents are on it. And I wonder if Facebook's time is limited.
Yeah, well, I got dragged kicking and screaming to it. I had an old manager that said, "Oh, I need you to join Facebook." Why? Because I need friends to get through this game. And then I started getting some old school friends look me up, and I thought, "Well, that's nice to be, because you lose touch with people over 20 odd years." So. Mm-hmm. But now it's I go on, I have a look, and
Max has a Facebook account. Never goes on there.
No, might be like might go down the way of MySpace.
Yeah, well,
down the track,
quite possible.
That was a big thing.
Yeah,
10 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And before that, the GeoCities website.
GeoCity communities.
Yahoo.
Jeez. All right. So, what have you got on your list?
I after sort of putting my foot in it to volunteer to come down to do the podcast with you, thought I better go and find some stories. I come across, what do we want to talk about, gear first?
We work our way down from the top.
Yeah, not a problem. Again, I've met Bruce through your Sydney Photographers group and through listening to the podcast, and being an hour down the road, it's quite handy to have a fellow photographer around the place.
Yep.
And you've opened my eyes up to the portrait photography and people photography stuff.
Yep.
I come across a beauty dish that's lightweight and collapsible.
Nice.
Which, after seeing some of the setups, they seem to be big and bulky.
Yep.
Sort of thing. It looks like it's a, from what I read of the story on Petapixel, it was a reboot of a dish that used to be around, and they rebooted it.
Okay. So what size is this? It's a Pro Photo off-camera flash beauty dish. Entire system weighs 1.1 pounds, 480 grams. Wow. That's pretty
so you
light.
You wouldn't want to get out in the wind with it.
Well, as long as you had a sandbag for your light stand, you'd be okay.
2 feet
across, 56 centimetres. So that's a nice size. Yeah, right.
I'll take your word on that. I'm still exploring those sort of...
Take my word on what? On the price or
on
the size
for the
beard. Oh, no, well, that's what it says in the story, so... 56 centimetres.
Whether that's
so.
A nice size to do that sort of work, I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, it's good for a lightweight, portable, you know, kind of thing. I mean, if you were to talk to Glenn, he'd tell you he loves his big 120 centimetre softbox, you know, and it would. That would be absolutely gorgeous, but it would be a lot more cumbersome to carry around.
Yep.
I mean, probably doesn't weigh that much, but... You know, the bigger it is, if you're going to take it outdoors, then the more sandbags you're going to need to hold it in place. Because, as you know, because of the lightness of the weight, but the massive surface area.
It just becomes a big sail.
Yeah, exactly. But no, that's a nice looking dish.
So
And it's a beauty dish in the middle, so it's not just a
softbox.
Like a softbox. It's firing into a plate, which is then reflecting back into the inside of the umbrella.
And from where my level of skill is with that, I don't want to invest a lot of money into a whole heap of studio gear if it's only going to sit around and do nothing at all.
Absolutely.
And I might
kind of what I'm guilty of with those lights that I bought. they get a use every now and again. But that's $180 for that, so I'm assuming that's at American price.
I would imagine it's American. Yeah, Petapixel.
Yeah, nice.
Other one I come across is the Polaroid Bright Saber helps turn your subject to the light side.
Okay. A bright saber. Yeah, oh, okay. So it looks like a lightsaber
from
Star Wars.
From Star Wars.
It's an LED lighting one.
Lighting one sort of thing.
Man, again, everyone's jumping on this bandwagon, aren't they?
Yeah, the Yongyuo that I saw, they were
Everyone's doing them. I like the idea of the coloured gels that basically just slide over the light. The wand,
yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So, and then you've got a remote control?
A remote control to shoot. See what I've got here.
Nice. $170 on Amazon. It's pretty cool.
And it's got a tripod mount. You can mount it to a tripod as well.
Yep. And a 12-volt DC, so you can actually plug it in if you, you know, want to use it as a constant light source and you don't want to be flattening your batteries. You can plug it into AC, so that's pretty groovy. Nice. All right, what's next? Oh, the Lee we covered last week.
Yeah. Again, I don't know. Even some of my landscape photographer friends that do, like, just leave me for dust.
Right.
And they've got 10 stoppers.
Yeah.
I don't think they'd be rushing out to grab their 15s. I just can't see the...
Man, as I was saying to David Marlin last week, you know, imagine the amount of time and just trying to calculate your exposure, because it would change with the changing of the daylight.
Well, even the angle of the sun's going to change the shot. Like, it's...
I don't know how you would calculate how long to leave the shutter open for, because if you started in the early hours of dawn before the sun's come up, then, you know, 4 hours later when the sun's fully up in the sky, you know, the reading you took, you know, in the pre-dawn light is completely irrelevant.
Yeah, and I don't know the... Like, I get the effect with the 10 stoppers to get, like, the water, like, if you're watching the ocean, just to get it smooth, like, misty, which... For me, that's not a person. I don't really like that.
Right.
Same as waterfalls. I prefer if I can see the...
Bit of texture on the water.
Texture on the water.
Right, yep.
Again, personal preference. Photography,
yeah, for sure.
But, yeah, I can't see... Like, even if you're doing, like, clouds rushing across the sky.
Yep.
That's probably about the only thing that I can see that the benefit of it, but...
Okay.
You'd want to have a fairly constant day with the clouds moving through to get any sort of effect with it.
Yeah, right.
But I can't see the... Lee probably obviously has seen a market for it, so...
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, we were talking about, you know, two-second exposures becoming, you know, 17-hour exposures. Obviously, we shouldn't necessarily assume that 2 seconds is your starting point, you know, because obviously if you're shooting something that, you know, you might have metered at a 500th of a second, then, you know, that's probably, you know, comparatively speaking, only... you know, 30 minutes or something, which wouldn't be too hard to deal with. But yeah, those 2 second exposures becoming 17 hours, that's just massive.
Well, that sort of leads into the next story that I finished. Next gadget. Right.
The tether tools?
The tether tools.
Yeah.
Now, I found the battery power thing first, which I thought, that's interesting, because, like, doing, like, astrophotography by anything, that you, like, if you're going to leave your shutter open for any length of period of time.
Yeah.
A great idea, except that I don't make them for Pentax. Everything else but.
Right.
Typical.
So hang on. So what is this? The Case Relay Infinite Camera Power.
Yeah, you're looking at it, so virtually your battery type, from what I can see it.
Okay, so you would buy...
You buy a like a power bank.
An adapter that has the same battery shape as your camera takes.
Yep.
But it has a cable coming out of it.
Comes out of it. That then goes to... There's a video there, which I didn't watch, because I tend not to watch a lot of things.
Yeah.
But it looks like any 5-volt USB external battery pack.
Yeah, right.
Or you plug into a USB...
Into an AC. Oh, okay, into a USB in an AC socket. Yeah, right. And so this provides you with constant 5-volt power to your camera. So, yeah, as you say, if you're doing astrophotography, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, astrophotography.
Yeah, if you're wanting to do, like, you know, multi-hour star trails and things like that. Wow.
And I don't know, even maybe the eliminating that problem that you have with the batteries going cold.
Oh, yes. Where the cold saps the electricity out of your batteries, yeah.
Which is odd with most battery sort of stuff. You like to keep them cooler than... hot, but if it's a super cold.
Yeah, but if it's too cold, as we discovered at Coonabarabran.
I didn't have any troubles.
I did. So just having a look at their drop-down list on the manufacturers there, they've got Canon, Fuji, Nikon, Olympus, Panasonic, Lumix, and Sony.
Yes. Poor old Pentax.
But no Pentax. Again. that's an interesting-looking concept, though.
Yeah, it's sort of... I thought, that's a, again, interesting. Like, even if you're doing lights and nuts, even out on the boat, like whale watching, I'll get through a day.
Right.
So I'd
on one battery or two?
On one battery.
Right.
I'm only shooting JPEG.
Yep.
But yeah, usually I don't need to swap batteries out.
Do you let the camera go to sleep while you're out there, or do you sort of keep giving the shutter a nudge every few seconds to keep it alive?
I don't even like giving the shutter a nudge because that throws the focus out. And
right.
Like what I tend to do with that is I'll focus out in the horizon somewhere, get it to infinity, or close wherever the camera thinks it's infinity is, not where it's marked on the lens. Then I'll flick to the manual.
Right.
So I've only just got to press and I know that's going to be in focus.
Yeah, right. See, that's the one thing I find frustrating with my Sony is even if I've switched to manual focus, if I don't touch anything on the body for more than 60 seconds, the camera goes to sleep.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Now, I can obviously change the sleep time. Mm-hmm. I just have it set to 60 seconds because I figure if I haven't touched it in 60 seconds, I'm probably not going to shoot.
I think I've turned straight away. Off.
But here's the frustrating part. The moment you touch something on the camera to wake it up, it automatically switches back to AF.
I'm lucky with that. Mine doesn't.
Yeah, which I do find a little annoying because I wish, you know, if I've set it to manual focus, I'd like it to wake up and stay in manual focus.
I tend to leave it in manual and I actually turn the display off on the back as well, like the instant review because it's extra battery power.
Yeah, for sure.
And slows the camera down, which is the problem with the model of camera I've got now is the buffer's not big enough to be... Like, I'll go through and I'll go, bang, 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 bang.
Yeah.
Bang, bang.
Oh, it slows down at the end of your
end of the
sequence.
The sequence.
Yeah, right.
And then if it hasn't cleared.
What resolution is the camera? Doesn't matter.
16 megapixel. Right. I can't remember. Okay. It's more than 10 because the old one was 10.
Right.
So it was 12 or 16 or something like that.
Yeah, right. All right.
So the other thing I found while looking on the Tether Tools site.
They've got rapid mounts.
Got rapid mounts.
And what are these?
These are just little clips and like look like they've got either double-sided tape or something like that to mount them to whatever fixture. They've got an easy grip mount, which looks like it's just a clamp, so you can mount a flash.
Oh, okay. So it's just...
They're like just different clamps, essentially.
Right,
but
for mounting your flash units on.
Mounting your flash units on.
Oh, okay.
So instead of lugging a tripod
around...
But
how do you stick that to the wall?
One of them looks like it's a suction... Type cap.
Oh, okay.
The power grip and...
Oh, easy peel tabs. There we go.
Yeah, easy peel tabs.
Right.
So I thought, again, continuing on with the looking at other photography genres that I might get into.
Yep.
I thought that wouldn't be a bad little option thing to look at.
Yeah, right. Some of the clamps here are pretty groovy, like the ones with arms and like T-bar type things that you can just... screw them onto rafters and whatever and hang flashlights off them. That's pretty cool.
So instead
of
having to carry tripods around, if you can get hide out of...
Yeah.
And just clamp it.
Yep. Yeah, nice.
But I haven't... that was about all I had a look on their website.
People we don't like.
Yeah, this is a... Again, from a personal perspective with whales and underwater photography and that sort of stuff. It's
Oh, wow.
The 2016 Winners of the Year.
For underwater photography.
Underwater photography.
Right. What is that?
Which
Cat
one?
Cat Shark Supernova. Whoa. I don't know what that is, but I'm assuming that that is a baby shark inside something. Hopefully not its mother. With the light shining down from above it.
I don't know.
What is that? That's trippy. That's very trippy.
Because you can't see the, like, whether it's a cuttlefish or anything like that.
Oh, I've got no idea.
No, I don't know.
Well, what's a cat shark? I'm assuming it's part of the shark family.
I'm Googling cat shark. I'm looking at the image. I'm having a look at that. Called dogfish or gator as well. They just look like a small shark, so... Probably like how Port Jackson's looking at the...
Yeah, right.
So they might have, like, again, for the American listeners that we've got, the Port Jackson sharks lay an egg where they've got their live in it. Haven't you seen them?
No.
Well, next time you're wandering around on the beaches, sometimes there'll be a...
So it's like an embryonic sac?
No, it's a... It almost looks like a bit of kelp wrapped up.
Right, okay.
It's like a cone sort of shape.
Right.
Egg.
Yeah.
And they're live in that.
Wow. Okay.
I'll show you later after the podcast.
Yeah,
I'll
show some photos of it. So there's the international wide angle winner. Hopefully the guy wasn't actually with his camera at the time that he took that.
With the bear, no.
Wide angle, highly commended, highly commended.
So yeah, it was just something that piqued my...
Oh, I love the international Rex winner. A family affair. That is great. The one of the wreck under the water, but you can see the island sort of...
So how do they do that? Is that sitting with the camera at water level?
Yeah, at water level. So basically half of the lens is above the water level and half of it's pointed down under the water. That's just great. Wow. And amazing to be able to get the exposure, you know, at a degree where, you know, it's not blown out in the top half of the image and it's not massively underexposed in the bottom half of the image.
Well, that's
awesome. Oy, oy, oy. Rex just freak me out. I don't know why. They just scare the crap out of me. I mean, I love looking at them. I love looking at photos of them, but the idea of swimming around them just scares the crap out of me.
I've been contemplating doing a dive course, but I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's cool. A girl playing a bass guitar underwater.
Where's that?
That's cool. That hey, there's some nice stuff in there.
So I sort of come across that and was very jealous and...
Yep.
As I do. And the other one with the...
The people we don't like.
Other people we don't like is the photographer who swim with humpback whales. So that'd be...
Wow.
Probably Tonga. They do a lot of that.
Whoa. That black and white image is just insane.
Yeah, it's just...
Wow. Oh, actually, there's a whole heap of black and white images. Sorry, the first black and white image. Yeah. Wow. That's incredible stuff.
Again, it's on the to-do list.
Yeah, right.
At some stages too.
Yeah, I used to scuba dive when I was a teenager, but you know it's been 25 years since I went for a dive. I'd have to re-qualify if I wanted to go diving again. But it is a absolutely beautiful experience if you've ever, you know, for those who've ever been scuba diving, you know what we're talking about. All right, what else we got?
We've got...
So the photographer's charged with 70 bus stops. We covered that last week as well.
I actually spoke to a friend in Canada who lives in
Edmonton, Alberta. Really?
And they do another photography podcast that I listen to. Like listen to them as well, and I sort of communicate on Twitter.
Yeah.
Have you seen this? Yes, she said, scum. That was her response. She said, I can't believe it.
Yeah, but right.
I said, what's the motivation? Apparently they were doing a... they had done a series of photographic stories with the buses or something like that.
Right.
I don't know why they went around and smashed the bus stops after it.
That's just bizarre.
So the World Press Photo disqualified 16 finalists this year.
16% of their finalists. Wow. And was this because images had been edited?
Obviously didn't meet the code of ethics with that.
7 of them were tossed for cloning parts of photos and 22 were thrown out for extreme processing. Well, there you go.
So it's happening. Like, it's
got to stick by the rules, people.
Yeah, that's it.
Because, I mean, let's face it, if it's press photo, I mean, we're not talking about, you know, artistic expression here. It's meant to be documentary, not, you know.
Well, I tend to try and shoot documentary, but sometimes it's one of my photos I've got. 2014 double wild breach and had a nice dark sky behind the, so I've just tweaked that a little bit.
Yeah,
I've just dropped the color a little bit more, made it more ominous.
Right,
the two whales in front. But again, I'm not a professional journalist.
No,
with the things, right. So a little bit of artistic, being artistic with it.
And that's fine. Have you entered it into any awards?
I can't find anything to
enter it in.
I just, I keep thinking, I must try and do that. And I just can't You look on the... Oh, yeah.
Well, there must be some that are, you know, nature-based it would be worthy of entry into.
I think so.
Yeah.
As I said, I'm probably my own worst critic with my photos.
Oh, aren't we all? That's always the way.
So all the other one that I've got, top five reasons to go full frame.
Yep.
That's mainly a tweak my interest because like, the Pentax had come out with the full frame. But
right. I didn't. So I assume you're currently shooting APS-C?
Yep.
Yep.
And the beauty of the Pentax is that the lenses are compatible with it.
Yep.
But if they're only suitable for the APS-C, it'll change the sensor size to suit.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know whether everyone else does that or is something like I've never seen. Like Canon, Nikon, whether they're the full frames are adaptable back to the APS.
The lenses?
Yeah.
Well, Glenn was talking about this just recently, a few episodes back, about how some, I can't remember if it's putting full frame lenses on an APS-C or if it's putting APS-C lenses on a full frame camera, that sometimes the shutter can actually scrape on the inside element of the lens because they protrude inwards a little bit. I'd have to go back and listen to the app.
I remember that one.
Do you remember? Yeah. So I know with the Sony, it's not an issue. I can use APS-C designed lenses on my A850.
And I guess why, again, from a Pentax point of view, they're looking at, hang on, we've got stuff from the 1970s.
Yep.
That will still fit onto these lenses if people want to use those.
Yeah.
1970s, 80s sort of lenses.
Yeah.
And be fully manual because they're not automatic.
But, right. Yep.
They're still compatible with it. So I don't need to go into that.
Okay. I'll put the link in the show notes for anyone that wants to go and read it. End of an era.
Fuji Instant Film with the Polaroids.
Right. So what sort of film is this?
That is the...
FP100C Professional. What is this 35mm film or...?
I had a film.
Oh, no, it's medium format.
It's medium format.
3.25 by 4.25 inch. So that would class as medium format, I would assume.
So again, just the death of another piece of...
Another film stock gone.
Film stock gone.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's going to happen. You know, I think more and more people are moving to digital. Many kicking and screaming. I think there are a lot of people that have wanted to stay with film who've felt that, you know, film didn't entirely match... the digital didn't match what film could do. But I think the gap is closing every day.
I think it's pretty much...
If it hasn't already surpassed
The amateur and semi sort of professional, I don't think there's a difference in it.
Every now and again, I come across something where someone's going, film still looks better. And I wonder, is it psychosomatic? Like, is it just in their mind that it's better, you know? I wonder
15 years ago, yes.
Absolutely.
15 years ago, you could definitely pick a difference. But
these days, and particularly with the resolutions that we've got now.
And from the majority of the people these days don't print photos.
No.
I was talking to a friend who was like helps out doing weddings. I said, "How's the wedding stuff going?" "Oh, we're down to 30 this year."
Right.
I said, "Okay, and why?" "Oh, well, they're only going for the basic package, which is only prints. It was only digital copies."
Right.
They're not getting prints done albums. So.
Yeah. Right.
How much resolution do you really need to put on a computer screen?
It depends what they plan to do with the digital files. After I guess, it, you know. I'm in that boat where, you know, okay, I'm shooting Jaden's wedding later this year, but even if it was somebody who wasn't a photographer, if they said to me, "We just want the digital files," I'd be happy to go, "Yeah, you know what?
Yep.
I couldn't be bothered having to do the photo book." I mean, if Jaden wants me to do the photo book for him, I will. It doesn't bother me, but it's not something I want to spend my time doing.
I did one for the whales. I thought I'll just put them together, do a sample run, see what it's like.
And but it's time-consuming.
I spent probably 2.5 to 3 hours on this website trying to put them together and then not knowing what the finished product's going to look like.
Yeah.
Spending the $60 I spent on the book and, hang on.
But that's a short amount of time to put a photo book together.
Yeah. Oh, I've spent
much more than that putting a book together.
Again, mine was just, I'll throw it together, see what the product's like, and then I can...
Yeah.
I've done like desktop publishing previously, and it's just so different to using an online sort of thing to knowing how to, that, like your spacing and where you can put text and that sort of stuff. So, but it's a learning curve.
Yeah.
And I like having photos printed.
Yeah.
I've got canvases up on the wall that have aluminium metallic prints that I've got up.
I noticed that, shame I didn't know about this last week, because I should have mentioned it in last week's podcast, because the offer finishes today. RGB Digital.
Yep.
I don't know if you saw it, if you get any of their emails or if you see them on Facebook, but they had this offer that was running up until today, which was 20 by 30 inch prints for $10.
Wow.
And I was so tempted. I was like, oh, have I got anything that I really, really, really want a print of? And I was like, not really.
I've got a 30 by 40 inch canvas.
Yeah, nice.
At home with a collage of the whale, one of the whale breeches.
Yeah, nice.
And I've sort of put it up because I've got there's a company in Brisbane that I use for the printing.
Right.
And he had a special one, and I thought, oh, yeah, I'll pay for it. And 6 months down the track, I hadn't done anything. Just going to get some photos done. Didn't look, just make sure in every collage that the horizons were aligned.
Ah.
So on a 30 by 40, you can sort of see there's the horizon there's there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, for me, it's in my own home. I'm not worried about it, but to show someone.
Yeah.
Well, this is what, hang on, that's all. Again, learning curve.
Yeah.
A bit more patience and time to...
I don't know that I'd be necessarily overly worried about that. If the composition works, then...
Again, it's me being pretty critical of the image, I guess. And not to pick it up when I'm doing the editing. Yeah. Like when I'm putting it all together, I sort of thought...
Yeah, but the thing is that when you're editing, you're looking at each image on a single image basis. Mm. You know, you're going, what works for this one image? You know, where does the crop need to be? You know, where do I want the subject of this shot to sit within the context of the frame? You know, and that's kind of why I think I wouldn't be overly worried, you know, because in the context of one image...
On the boat, you're moving, like, even between frames.
Of course. Of course.
And you just saying, like, looking through the...
Oh, so you're saying it's a sequence of shots?
It's a sequence of shots.
Oh, okay.
That I put together.
Yeah. All right, maybe I'd be a little bit more concerned about consistency.
I've fixed it up now. but the consistency in the last two frames of the colour has changed, whether the angle of the sun or the angle of the boat moved in the...
You didn't shoot auto white balance, did you?
Possibly.
Yeah, no, I'd never do that. Or if I did, I would pick a white balance from one shot and then map all of the... rest of the images to the same color balance.
Yep.
Just for consistency. Yep. I almost never shoot almost all that cut white
the,
balance.
I was almost going to cut the last two photos out.
Yeah.
Because they're only the virtually the splash.
Right.
So they're not that critical to it. But.
Probably the only time I would shoot with auto white balance these days is for something like a wedding where you're sort of changing environments so rapidly. And of course, I shoot raw, so it doesn't really matter. Yeah. But that's probably the only time where I'd ever shoot all day white balance. Generally, I'll go.
Try that this year then.
What are we? What am I shooting under? If it's sunlight, I'll go for daylight. And if I'm shooting under shade, I'll shoot, with a shade white balance, just so that the white balance is consistent across all of the images from that sequence.
Yeah,
well, that's just my approach. All right, what else we got?
Again, another hobby interest / trial and everything is the. Right. How to capture the movement of the moon in a single image.
The movement of the moon in a single image.
Which is how we see the lovely, even the solar eclipses, they've also done that.
Oh, okay, with a whole sequence of the moon across the frame, yep.
Again, time and effort, and that I'll have to get out and do that at some stage.
So how did they do this? I mean, that would surely have to be multiple images, no? Like nothing more than your DSLR, mid-range telephoto, zoom, a tripod, and some software like Photoshop. Method is simple. Take several photos of the moon as it moves. Yeah, right. Okay, so they're just stacking the images.
Stacking the images.
Right, okay. Right.
So probably nothing super, but again, set of...
Yeah, okay. The headline was kind of misleading because it made it seem, at first glance, that they were teaching you a way to do that on a single frame, but it's not. It's multiple frames that are then stacked and compressed
again,
in Photoshop.
Again, past my skill level even with that. I use Photoshop and I use Lightroom to a very basic level.
Nice to see in that blog post a shout out to the photographer's Ephemeris. Have you ever used that? That is great software.
I've either got that or something very similar.
Yeah. Photographer's Ephemeris, for those who don't know, is like Google Maps for photographers. It basically shows you the angle of sunrise and sunset, moonrise and moonset, the times at which those events will occur, and it allows you to drop a pin on the map so that you can basically scout out, you know, the day before, okay, I want to shoot from this location, what time is the sun going to come up and at what angle and all that kind of stuff, and it'll, you know, tell you blue hour and golden hour and all that sort of stuff. Definitely worth checking out if you haven't. If you're a landscape shooter, it's a must-have in my book.
Yeah, I've either seen it or I've got something similar
to it. Yeah, cool.
How often I use it? It's not very often, but it's there.
Yep.
That's about all that I had for...
Excellent. Well, mate, thank you for that. That's great. Was that... And what's the whale tail?
That's just me.
Self-promotion.
They're my links.
Okay, and so we've got some links to your stuff on Facebook and on Instagram, which I'll put in the show notes so people can check out David's photography.
I'm in the process of redoing my website.
Oh, okay.
It's currently with Photo Merchant.
Yep.
And I'm sort of leaning more towards it. Because the struggle, I've gone and got a quote to get it professionally done.
Yep.
And that just blew me away.
I'm thinking... Four figures.
Yeah.
Yep.
It wasn't unreasonable I thought, well, if it's not unreasonable for the amount of time and effort goes into it, I sort of worked the value out for that.
Yeah.
But I'm more looking to be able to, I guess, maybe go for more of a portfolio sort of thing and direct people to there and see what happens. Because I want to be able to, every trip that I'm on,
yep,
say, this is the date, put all that stuff into that date file.
Yeah, right.
And that way people on the cruise can say, usually at the end of the cruise, I'll go around and hand a card out. So if you missed out, have a look at my stuff. I might have something that you might be interested in.
Yeah, cool.
But I want to be able to drop it down to, say, XYZ date, and this is the photos that we've got for that day, as opposed to scrolling through the whole month of whatever, which is the way that my website's set up at the moment, but I can't drop it down to that next sub-level.
Right,
So break it down a bit more. So I'm still
started
looking at that today.
Cool. All right, well, let us know how it goes.
Yeah, I'll see how we go.
Cool.
Keep looking.
Excellent.
Something will be out there.
All right.
If anyone's got any hints or cheats or something that can point me in the right direction.
Yeah.
Flick me an email or Facebook me.
Cool.
I don't like spending a lot of time with technical sort of internet-y sort of website stuff.
Yeah, right. Now, I'm thinking Glyn should be back from India next week. Is that right?
I think
he's about the 23rd he said he gets back, which would be Wednesday of next week.
Yeah.
So, with any luck...
You might have your regular co-host back.
We'll have some Glyn for you next week. Well, maybe.
Maybe.
If he's not too jet-lagged. So, yeah.
No, he looks like he's been having a fair bit of fun.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, absolutely.
I'd love to get to the Cuba trip.
Cuba. Oh, that would be amazing.
Just get over there, as Glenn said, before it becomes too commercialised.
Too commercialised, yep.
And I've seen photos before, like the old 1950s cars and all that.
Yeah, it's time-locked in the 50s.
It'd just be fantastic to go and have a look at. And the good old bank account's not going to...
You just sort of
decide, oh, well, that'd be a good fun trip to do, or do I go whale watching?
Yeah.
It's that balancing act.
Yeah. Like, well, mate, thanks for coming
down.
That's
right. Thanks for having me.
No dramas.
It's been fun.
No worries. And we will talk to you all next week.
Shutters Inc., another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.